Hey, my name is Brian Golden. I'm the lead pastor of Centerpoint Church, and I just want to personally thank you for listening to our podcast. And I also want to invite you, wherever you are around the country or in the Tampa Bay area, to join our digital online campus at centerpointfl.org. And here's what you need to know. Our vision is to create an alternative to church as usual for all people. And all that means is, regardless of whether you've been a longtime follower of Jesus, you're new to faith, you're investigating faith, or you don't even know what you believe, our goal is for you to feel like you belong, even if you never believe. And so thank you again for listening, and I hope today's message encourages you and helps you. So here's the thing about every single one of those. Those were all real stories of real people. And what I want to talk about for the next couple weeks is maybe you found yourself, and I'm pretty confident online, maybe you're listening to Unfiltered Radio, you're in the house, you're part of our gathering, that we've all experienced this, but you find a sudden change in circumstances, you walk through something that just came out of nowhere, and maybe it's either you personally, but then for others of us, it's somebody that we love that hits really personally. And all of a sudden, maybe for the first time ever, or for the first time in a long time, you find yourself kind of doubting God because of those circumstances. Let's just be really honest. Some of you feel angry at God because it just has not matched up with what you expected. Others of you feel like God is angry at you. I mean, you're looking at your circumstances and your unanswered prayers, and it just feels like maybe God's paying you back. Maybe God's angry at you for something in your past, spring break, 08. I don't know. And if there was a spring break, oh wait, maybe that's the spirit of God. I don't know. You're on the verge of losing faith. Some of you, and I deal with this all the time. I mean, this is the issue maybe more than any other issue. I mean, it kind of supersedes all the intellectual arguments. It's the emotional arguments that it's walking through a circumstance you don't understand where you just have walked away from faith. And maybe you're not going to believe this, but what I would say to you is I don't blame you. And I get it, and I don't understand your story, but I understand why you would be tempted to walk away. And maybe if I had experienced what you experienced, I'd have some of the same doubts. I'd be right on the verge of kind of wobbly faith as well. And so what I want to talk about for the next couple weeks is that kind of tension of under the circumstances, how do you find a way to hold on to God when it feels like God might not be holding on to you anymore, and your circumstances just don't seem to give evidence to that. I want to look at this statement in the New Testament that I'm telling you, this is one of the most insensitive statements by anyone, anywhere, anytime. Can you guess who said it? Jesus. The most insensitive statement you could ever imagine. And in the circumstance, Jesus went out of his way, basically risked his reputation, which he did multiple times. Jesus, if you ever feel bad about yourself as a preacher or communicator, you just remember that several times Jesus gave messages and then they wanted to stone him afterwards. And you're like, well, I'm not that bad. Jesus just, he would risk his reputation. I mean, he would lay it all on the line. And he would create a scenario, a tension that would, and it's so uncomfortable, deliberately kind of unearth grief and loss and pain and anger and frustration and death. And he did it to assure us basically that God is aware in whatever you're walking through, that God cares, and that he is with you in it and he is with you through it. But I'm telling you, it is so disturbing. It is so uncomfortable. Honestly, it's hard to even grapple with it at if you just really enter into the story. And some of you know the story really well, where Jesus gets word that this guy was more than a guy. I mean, in fact, Jesus gets word, and the only thing the telegram says is the person that you love is sick. I mean, there's not that many people in our life that just could go without a name, and you just know instantly who it is. That's how tight they are. And so Jesus gets word from two sisters of this guy by the name of Lazarus that their brother is sick, and he's on the verge of death. And they're assuming what any human being would assume, like you don't even have to love people at that deep a level. Just care, some kind of compassion. You hear that they're in trouble, and you have the ability to help. I mean, the assumption is ASAP, Jesus is going to get there. And so they're waiting for Jesus to come, and for good reason. I mean, they had watched Jesus heal strangers. You look, throughout the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I mean, Jesus sometimes, humanly speaking, would heal people that was seemingly by accident. One time he's on the way to heal a girl that nobody knew, and this lady touched him, and she was healed. And so they had seen Jesus do this over and over and over again. And so the sisters assume, well, Jesus is going to get here right away. They send Mary and Martha, their names. They send the telegram, you know, or whatever it was, to Jesus. The Lazarus is sick. He's on the verge of death. So we should see you any minute now. And the disciples, you know, they're probably gathered around Jesus when he gets this message. They hear the message. Jesus reads it out loud. And they're like, yeah. They get up, grab their coat, and they're ready to go out the door. And Jesus is like, sit down. And like, what do you mean sit down? We just got word that one of the guys that you're closest to in terms of an earthly relationship is sick and on the verge of death. They've supported Lazarus, his sisters, Mary and Martha, our entire ministry. They've been there the whole way. They have contributed financially. I mean, come on. You owe them. I mean, you've healed strangers. This is the time we go. And Jesus is like, we're not going. So we're going to stay here. And so for 2 days, they stay in place. In fact, here's how tension-filled this narrative is. John, who writes about the experience because he was there, actually says this. He says that Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And do you know why John wrote that? Because if this is all you knew about the narrative of the story, you would doubt whether Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus. You'd be like, I think maybe he's angry at Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. I think that maybe, I don't know, all the things that we think about God, maybe they didn't obey. Somewhere they went off the rails. He's paying them back. This is God's judgment. But certainly he doesn't love them. He gets word that his friend is near death. The guy that could do something about it, he decides to do nothing about it. And so John's just like, hey, I just want you to know, Jesus actually does love Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, because what I'm about to write about is gonna make you think he doesn't. But God actually loves them intensely. And so 2 days go by. And I don't know what they were doing there during this time, but they're just sitting around. And then finally, Jesus tells his disciples, hey, we're going to go now. And they're thinking, what now? What? Why have we been sitting here for 2 days? And Lazarus has probably already passed away. So we sit here for 2 days. We do nothing. It's not like you had another agenda item of things that we had to get done. We don't do anything. And now you're telling us that we should get up and go? Like, and by the way, because they're about to go to Bethany, the disciples are like, the last time we were in Bethany, Jesus, I think you know all things, you probably know this. Last time we went to Bethany, it didn't go well for us. In fact, here's specifically what they said, John records it. But Rabbi, a short while ago, the Judeans there tried to stone you. I don't know if you remember that. I'm imagining it's etched in your memory, but the last time we went into that town, they tried to stone you, and yet you're going back? I mean, Jesus, come on. We've known for 2 days and you didn't move. And now we're gonna go and you're gonna risk your life. I mean, come on. Can you do like a, you know, work from home miracle? Well, you got that power. We've seen you do stuff. Like, you can do whatever you wanna do. But I'm pretty sure we don't need to go to Bethany. And by the way, Jesus, we're concerned for you. Because really they were just worried about themselves and what was gonna happen to them. And yet Jesus says to them, he replies, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. In verse 12, his disciples replied, Lord, I mean, this is so on brand with the disciples. Lord, if he sleeps, he's going to get better. I mean, get him some electrolytes and some soup. He's on the mend. We don't need to go to Bethany. It's dangerous. He's going to be fine. And so Jesus, I think, rolls his eyes as he did often. He's like, guys, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake. And here it is. And I bet John deliberated. Do I even include this? Do I even write this? This is gonna be so misunderstood, it's so uncomfortable. I mean, John was there, and I think it's still uncomfortable for John to write about what happened. And for your sake, Jesus' words, I am glad that I was not there. Because, like Jesus, all due respect, you better have a good reason. I mean, I don't know where this is gonna go, but I mean, 2,000 years later, people might be reading about this. And like, there better be a good reason for why your maybe best friend on earth, his sisters, people who are close to you, supported you all along, that you don't show up for them, even though you can do something and you're glad that you didn't show up. I mean, you know who I'm glad, I bet is not glad? I bet Lazarus isn't glad. You know, I bet also is not glad. Mary and Martha, they're not glad. I mean, Jesus, you deliberately allowed or created, I mean, however you want to look at it, grief and loss. And disappointment and frustration and anger and doubt at you. Why would you allow that? And you are glad that you were not there. So Jesus, why were you glad? I mean, how in the world could you even utter such a thing? And so Jesus says, I'm glad I was not there. So that purpose statement, you may, what's the word? that you may believe. Now you should read the whole narrative for yourself, and I'm gonna give you a reading plan at the end, but I love Thomas's, and I'll get back to the verses. I love Thomas's response, and I relate with it, but Thomas is like, I don't really relate with his personality, but Thomas is like the Eeyore of the group. Everybody's got this friend that's constantly negative, like whatever, it's gonna suck, it's gonna be terrible. And so immediately Thomas' response is, let's go that we may die with them. Come on, guys, let's go. We'll all go die together with Jesus, because that's where this is headed. And so here's Jesus' disturbing statement. I'm glad that I was not there. So that you may believe. And the question is, believe what? Like, Jesus, again. What is so important to believe that you would allow a scenario, that you would create a scenario in a circumstance where you allow your operative word, friend, to suffer and die? Like, what is so important to believe that you would allow his sisters to watch the whole thing happen, to watch this scenario go down? Like, how could you allow that to happen? What could be so important that we believe that you would allow this and you haven't even intervened? And the answer to that question really depends on the you that he's talking about. I'm glad I was not there so that you might believe. And obviously, like, Jesus is there with his apostles or his disciples, and so he's talking to them, but he's not just talking to them. Because when John writes this narrative, he writes years after the resurrection. And so the you that John is writing to is you. It's you. The you that John is writing to is me. The you that John is writing to and that Jesus is speaking to is all his 21st century followers. And he's putting on display the fact, again, so uncomfortable. Jesus engineered this heartbreaking moment that he allowed to happen so that we could know and address our where is God when we need him circumstances. The you that he's talking about is the you that don't believe. For some of us, because of the circumstances, we can't explain the fact that God didn't answer our prayers and there's just so much misunderstanding, chaos. He's speaking to the you that used to believe. And what I love about this narrative and love about what Jesus does, as hard as it is to kind of grapple with, is that in this moment, Jesus affirms your feelings in those moments where it has felt like God has not been near and that maybe God abandoned you. And Jesus affirms for some of you, let's just be honest, your feelings right now. And he does it without any condemnation. And so Martha, maybe you know the story, she hears that Jesus is approaching town. So she like goes out of the house where Lazarus has died and she goes out probably roadside and she's waiting for Jesus. And I mean, that had to have been an excruciating amount of time. I mean, she probably spent a ton of time out there going, when in the world is he gonna show up? Why is he not here? Why is he not paying attention to our pleas? None of this adds up. And she's grappling with the fact that he gets there and he's too late. Like, he missed the opportunity to heal Lazarus in her mind. He missed the funeral and she's furious. And come on, I say this all the time, we over-romanticize biblical stories and we don't see ourselves in them and they lose their power. You would be furious. In fact, you have been furious because with, you know, different circumstances, we felt the same thing. And you're not at roadside waiting for Jesus to come back, but you're waiting for a prayer to be answered. You're waiting for a relationship to be reconciled. You've been so faithful. You've been so obedient. And you kind of feel like you would never say this, but God owes you and God has not come through for you lately. And God came through for them and they're a train wreck and God's not answered your prayer. And there she is waiting and pleading and hoping and thinking all that we've done for Jesus, all that we've done for, you know, his gang of 12, all the work that we've been a part of, and you don't even show up when we needed you the most. And then Martha says to Jesus, what so many of you, us have thought, right? Verse 21, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But you didn't show up. And in essence, She's saying what so many of us have felt. Jesus, it's your fault. It's your fault. Because you could have done something about it. You could have answered that prayer. You could have healed the diagnosis. You could have intervened faster. You could have changed their heart. You could have rearranged circumstances. You could have allowed me to be in a different time, different space, meet somebody different. Like you could have kept the entire thing from happening and you didn't. So I don't know what other conclusion to draw, especially when I'm walking through a circumstance, no fault of my own. I didn't do this. I didn't choose this. I didn't ask for this. And here I am and you have done nothing on my behalf. So what other conclusion can I draw? That the God who raises the dead has not come to my defense. It's your fault. And this is where I honestly, it's disturbing, but it's so helpful because this is the moment in the narrative where Martha's story intersects with our story. Because you have had those moments where something goes down and you're walking through tragedy. And in essence, you kind of leverage that tragedy as evidence that maybe God doesn't care. Maybe God isn't there. And I will just tell you, I've done this long enough to know, I don't care how theologically astute you are, how spiritual you thought you were, how long you followed and obeyed Jesus, difficult circumstances where God does not seem to come through can take the faith out from under anybody. In fact, more than an intellectual reason, it is the number one reason people walk away from faith because it is just so hard to understand. Or maybe you've leveraged the disappointment that you feel to point to the fact that, like, here's the circumstance that I'm going through, and if God was good, and if God loved me, and if God was for me, come on, you know what I'm talking about, God would intervene. God would do something. God would at least let me know he's involved. And I'm not getting any of that. I feel like God is against me. And you kind of leverage that disappointment to go, and if that's the way God's responding, then I'm not sure if there is a God. Or I'm not sure that that God is good because either he could have done something and decided not to, or he just can't. And here, just go with me for a second. And isn't it interesting when we do that and we have those feelings, we almost feel like we're outside of the faith system and we're lobbing criticism into it. Meaning, you know, some of you walked away from faith entirely, so it's just, you know, it's easy to kind of sit back and go, no way God would do that, or no way there is a God if that would happen. But then others, you haven't let go to faith completely, but you maybe don't pray anymore. I think there's still a God, but I'm not really on good terms with him. I'm still angry with him. All of it's still raw. And I'm just telling you, with what I do, there is not a season that goes by that there's not multiple people like this in my life that I know about intimately. And you're just in this place where you haven't let go of faith entirely, but it still feels like when you kind of leverage pain and tragedy to go, I'm not sure that God is really on my side or for me. It feels like you're outside of the faith system and you're just lobbing criticism in it or at Jesus. And here's what I love about what Jesus does in this moment. Is that Jesus invites you in, and basically Jesus draws a circle for all of those people. Jesus drew a circle large enough to include you. That you don't have to stand on the outside of the faith system or on the outside of what you believe about God and Jesus. Jesus is like, no, I'm actually gonna draw a circle and I'm gonna include you into it with all of your doubt, all of your anger, Jesus would say, at me, all of your frustration, because I understand. And that whatever you feel in this moment that causes you to lash out or maybe move to a place that I don't even know you exist, God does not condemn you. And in fact, in the story, all of your doubt, this is what some of you have needed to hear from somebody in church for a long time, all of your criticism, all of your frustration, all of your anger, all of it's included because you are included into God's grand narrative, whether you're on good terms with God or not right now, God's grand narrative of good news, of great joy for all people. Even people who doubt him. And even people who have let go of him in the midst of really unspeakable tragedy. And even people who are not sure that they can maintain faith any longer. Because he is inviting you to believe in spite of and in the midst of, or to believe again in spite of or in the midst of. But the question is, believe what? After, after Martha, Mary comes out and she's just weeping. And she, and this is what I love about the realism, that she just unloads all of her frustration and all of her disappointment at Jesus. And in verse 33, when Jesus saw her weeping face to face, finally arrives. And the Judeans who had come along with her also weeping, he was what? And everybody there is thinking, deeply moved now? Why weren't you deeply moved like 4 days ago? Why weren't you deeply moved when he got the word? Why have you chosen now? Like, what took you so long? And yet it says when Jesus gets there and she's weeping, he is deeply moved in spirit, and he's, what's the word? That little Greek word right there, trouble, has the idea of anger, that literally in this moment, Jesus is expressing anger. And part of like your take on that could be like, what are you angry about? Like, Jesus knows the end of the story. Jesus knows where this is going. And yet this is such an important moment, because Jesus is really referring all the way back to the beginning of the story in the Garden of Eden, where God created everything. And maybe you don't believe in Genesis, and I get that, but just go with me for a second. That God created everything for universal flourishing and universal wholeness. And everything was exactly as he intended it. And then what we believe is that sin entered the world and it fractured everything. In fact, the New Testament says that where there is sin, there's death. Sin kills stuff. Physically, spiritually, reputations, relationships, morality, our future, our dreams. Sin just jacks everything up. And in Genesis 3:15, he references this veiled reference that one day there is gonna be a savior, one day there's gonna be a rescuer, and one day he is gonna set everything back to its original design, universal flourishing, universal wholeness, no sin, no death, no betrayal, no dysfunction. And in this moment, Jesus enters into the anger and actually feels it. And what he is saying through his troubled, angry spirit is, this is not how I designed the world to work. And I feel it as much as you feel. In fact, in a short while, I'm really gonna feel it. But this is not my original design, and it will not be the end of all things. But in the meantime, I'm gonna enter into every bit of it. And there he is. And the question of why does Jesus weep in this moment when he knows what's coming? Because Mary and Martha are weeping. Let's just check this out. Mary and Martha, who in this moment doubt Jesus, blame Jesus, and Jesus steps in with the very people who doubt him and blame him, and he weeps with them. He feels it with them, despite how they feel about him in the moment. And maybe you know the story that Jesus, they lead him to the cave or the burial place where Lazarus is at. Funerals were days-long events. They were big, big deals. And so they're all still there. Lazarus is in this tomb in John 11:35 that says that Jesus gets there and Jesus wept. And there's two groups of people that were there in that moment, and you can read the narrative for yourself. And one group is like, man, see how much he loved Lazarus? And then there's the other more sarcastic group. Maybe you'd be a part of that group. And they're like, well, you know what? If he really loved him, he could have gotten here 4 days ago. If he really loved him, his friend wouldn't be dead. If he really loved him, he would have gotten here sooner. And all that was true. I mean, all that was true. But what they didn't understand is Jesus' agenda was bigger than that moment. I've talked to you about this before, but it's one of the ways that you can learn to read the New Testament and the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, that what Jesus was doing in the moment was never about the moment. It was never about the miracle. The miracle was always a sign. The sign always pointed to somebody, pointed to him. And it pointed to ultimately what he wanted the generations to know. This was not about the moment. This was about Jesus organizing a circumstance to reveal who he is so that people could know how God responds to pain and suffering throughout every generation. In this moment, he had a bigger agenda in mind. He had you in mind. He had me in mind. And so Jesus steps up and he does the unthinkable. And he tells all these people that are there at the tomb, roll the stone away. Which just, I mean, that's just a casual like thing in the text. Roll this. That's not a casual endeavor. I mean, the stone is massive. This is the equivalent of your friend that asks you to come and help move, and then they don't pack a thing when you get there. And you're like, no thanks. I'm never gonna help you move again. Like, this is that. Like, this is a lot of effort. And Jesus is like, move the stone. And then Martha reminds him. She's like, Jesus, can I just, you know, by this time there's a bad odor, Jesus. For he's been there for how long? 4 days. And again, Martha's like, I think she's trying to be respectful, even though she blames him. She's angry. They're frustrated, and they should be. And she's not trying to twist the knife, but Jesus, just, you're 4 days late. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You're 4 days late. And then this is my favorite part. Jesus kind of steps back. I don't know if you've ever been in a crowd where there's multiple people you just know don't like you. Some frustration at you. They're not on great terms. You know, unfortunately, I've been in those situations a couple times. And Jesus knows everything that's happening around him. And then he just starts to pray. And he prays out loud because he wants everybody to hear his prayer. Not because he's being pretentious, because what he is punctuating and demonstrating, the world would need to know. And so Jesus begins to pray in verse 41. Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you've heard me. Even though they don't feel like, you know, you're hearing anything and they don't feel like I hear them, thank you that you've heard me. Verse 42, and I knew that you always hear me. But I said this, because there's a lot of people who are not believing right now in this moment, and I get it, because the circumstances are bad and I didn't show up on time. But I said this for the benefit of the people who are standing here. And for the benefit of people who maybe would sit right here. People who would walk through circumstances and it feels like it's crushing you. Or it's crushed your faith. And it is so tempting to walk away from God in that moment. So tempting to believe that God does not hear your prayers. And it just feels too heavy and it feels too hard and I don't know how I'm gonna keep carrying this. And then you just start to wonder. And I just wanna put us all on the same page. If you've wondered, you are in great company. Does God hear my prayers? And does God know my pain? And am I being punished? Or maybe it's just all a lie. Jesus would say, I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe. And again, you're like, believe what? Like, Jesus, why are you glad that you were not there so that they would believe? And here it is. So that they would believe, the generations would believe, that you would believe in the midst of your maybe pain and struggle and suffering, that they would believe that you sent me. And everybody there is like, okay, so Jesus, you orchestrated this entire circumstance just to reveal who sent Jesus? And Jesus is like, yes, I did. And you think that was a good idea? Yes, I do. You think it was worth it? Yes. Yeah, I do. Because if the Father sent the Son to show us what the Father is like, if that's true, and this is unlike any other religion, you just have to understand that, where every other religion is like, well, you should believe this set of teachings. You should believe somebody wrote this down one time because they had a dream. You should believe this thing of this is how God thinks and feels. That's not the movement of Jesus. Instead, the movement of Jesus is God sent God into human flesh to condescend into human flesh. So we didn't have to read it on a page. We didn't have to adopt a philosophy. We didn't have to just memorize a text. God came in physical body to represent what God the Father is like. So if you want to know how God views the world, you just need to watch Jesus. If you want to know how God sees marginalized people, don't look at other Christians. Don't look at other religions. Don't look at culture. Look to Jesus, because it is radical. If you want to know how God sees everything around you, how God responds to your doubt and your criticism and your anger and your frustration and your pain and your suffering. This is not about reading it on a page. Jesus came to demonstrate that this is how God the Father responds. And if the Father sent the Son and represents the Father, it means that when you weep, God the Father weeps with you. And it means that whatever you're walking through, the pain and the sorrow, he cares for you and he does not condemn you when you doubt. or when you lash out. That if the Father is like the Son, and he sent the Son to represent the Father, you can know that your circumstances are not an indicator of God's absence or God's silence. And if the Father sent the Son to demonstrate what the Father, God the Father, can do, it means that there is hope regardless of your circumstances. And so Jesus takes a deep breath and he calls out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, and I'm pretty sure a bunch of people passed out. And therefore, many of the Judeans who had come to visit Mary and had what? Epicenter of our faith. It's about what was seen, the validated what was said, so that the world could know what was seen in terms of what Jesus did, and they did what? They believed in him. They believed that Jesus was sent by God the Father, and that what you see in Jesus, that's what God's like. And come on, with what you see in Jesus, if he really represents the Father, how diametrically opposed is it to some of the theology, the Christian experience, other Christians and churches that you have experienced? Because Jesus is just different. And in this moment, revealing the fact that if he came from the Father, he can be trusted. And if the Father is like the Son, there is hope. And so, Jesus, I'm glad that I was not there so that you might believe. And in this story, Jesus included every single one of us into the story. And that we can face tomorrow and whatever is coming and whatever you're walking through right now with the confidence that God will be a part of our story. And come on, let me just be honest. Now, 2,000 years later, I mean, I feel bad for Lazarus, but it was a good end of the story. I feel bad for Mary and Martha, but I'm so grateful Jesus didn't show up on time. I'm so glad he didn't get there, because regardless of whatever you're walking through, again, every generation, every person, this circumstance, Jesus deciding I'm gonna be late and I'm gonna show up after it's all over and I'm gonna rip the hearts of people out, but it is something that I'm doing for every generation so that you could know, so the world could know. Circumstances are not an indicator of God's absence. And they are not an indicator of God's lack of concern. And that's so difficult. And we're gonna look at this more next week. But if I just be honest, one of the greatest tragedies in our generation, and I don't wanna be overly critical, but it's worth being critical, is a theology that signs Jesus' name to promises that Jesus never made. And for some of you, the church as a whole just needs to apologize to you, because you were given a Sunday school faith that never grew up with you, that made promises about, well, if you just believe enough in Jesus, and people flock to that kind of theology because it sounds good for a while. And there's a lot of Sundays you're gonna go to brunch and go, that was amazing, that's incredible, until life hits. And then your theology doesn't match up with real life, and you start to doubt or be angry at God about promises God never made, because the promise was never, if you just muster up enough faith, if you just believe, if they just anoint you with oil and you just muster up enough, I believe and I'm confident in God, then I'm gonna grow wealthy and healthy and God's gonna restore and God's gonna heal. And if it didn't happen, I just don't have enough faith. God never promised that. In fact, God got to the end of his life, and I love you, and I think you're amazing. You don't have as much faith as Jesus. And Jesus, with all of his faith, it didn't end well. And it didn't end well, as we looked at last series, it didn't end well because God was doing something bigger than just that moment for the salvation of the world. And so I say all that to say, some of you have walked away from God and grappled with these difficult circumstances because we have based a Christian faith, especially in our culture, on so much feeling. And when I feel it and when I see it and connect the dots and things are up and to the right, because we are so used to prospering that we so easily let go when we don't feel it anymore. And we can't connect the dots. And we don't know what God is doing, but welcome to the story of faith. All throughout the New Testament. In Hebrews, which I've quoted before, and nobody loves to quote the end of Hebrews 11. about conquering armies and overturning and winning and miracles. And then everybody stopped short of it. And then some of them were eaten by lions. And they had just as much faith. And so Jesus doesn't show up in this moment for us to understand that regardless of what you feel, regardless of unanswered prayer, that God and what he's doing in your life and the fact that you don't understand it is not an indicator of his absence. And in fact, if the Son, Jesus, if his empathy, if his compassion, if his concern is an indicator of the Father's empathy, compassion, and concern, then what Peter said was right when he said this: humble yourselves. And he said this to a group of Christians that were going through some really difficult times. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand. The hand that calms the storm, gives sight to the blind, raises the dead. There's nobody who has power like Jesus' power. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he might lift you up, in some cases lift you out, in other cases lift you through in due time. And then verse 7, cast all your, literal Greek translation, all your anxieties, all your worries, all your cares, all of your concerns on him, because he cares for you. Not because you're trying to muster up hope to get you through, because Jesus said it and then he validated it, not just through Lazarus's resurrection, that was just a warm-up act, through his own resurrection, so that the world would know. You can cast all your cares and anxiety on him, your frustration, your anger, your doubt, because even if you are at odds with him, he still cares for you. And this whole verse has the idea of, at a deep level, this might be two or three layers below, and I get in trouble for this sometimes, but it's true. Some of you need to learn to pray R-rated prayers. God already knows. You need to get honest about, this is what I feel. This is where I'm at. This is not the surface level. This is three layers below all of the anger, all of the doubt. God, what are you doing? And when you are able to begin to take all of that to him in the midst of unanswered prayer and I don't understand, God begins to do something in that. And I get it. Like, you listen to me and you go, well, that's easy for you to say. It's easy for me to say. I don't know your story. And I have some of my own stories, but even more than that, because of what I do, I have walked with countless people through dark nights of the soul and unbelievably excruciating circumstances, and watching them in those circumstances, as if I needed more evidence, convinces me that this is absolutely true. Over this last year, and this is just one, I could share more stories. Over this last year, I was a part of two of the funerals I was a part of. One was a mom that I've known for many, many years, got a call at a time where you don't want to get a call and you know that nothing's going to come from that call that is beneficial or good. And she heard the word that she lost her 19-year-old son. And I can't imagine that. My parents can imagine that. I can't imagine that. And then I walked with a friend that his wife, who was seemingly in perfect health at 55 years old, got a devastating diagnosis out of nowhere. And this lady who's in perfect health, 55 years old, within a year, she was gone. And they pleaded with God for a miracle. And they pleaded for some kind of resurrection. And they did not get a miracle. And they did not get a resurrection. And yet, they believed that there was one. And in fact, these individuals were absolutely confident that it wasn't the last one. And they have walked through extraordinary pain and grief, and they have held on to the hope and the source of strength that Jesus came from the Father to demonstrate what God is like. And if that's true, then he will weep with those who weep, even when they're angry at him or doubt him, and they will strengthen those who need it. And one day, a resurrected king will eventually right all things. And that Lazarus' resurrection and Jesus' resurrection was not the last resurrection. And so whatever you're going through, you're facing, you're stuck in, and you feel like there's no solution, there's no options, I just want to say this over you, and we're gonna conclude. And I say this under the authority of a resurrected Savior who created a circumstance to demonstrate and to authenticate that this is true. God has not abandoned you. God cares for you. God weeps with you. And you are invited, or maybe for some of you, invited back to cast all of your cares, all of your fears, all of your anxieties, all of your frustration, all of your anger, all of your God, where have you been at, on him, because he cares for you. And what you will find in that place, when you are able to do that in the midst of the hurt, in the midst of the pain, you will find peace. And I don't understand it, but that's actually what Peter writes about in the New Testament, where he says, God will infuse a supernatural peace that is beyond human comprehension and understanding, and it only comes from the Spirit of God. And it's in that place where you're able to cast all your anxieties and cares and fears on him because he cares for you, that you experience what the New Testament Hebrews writer says, the strengthening, sustaining grace to not give up, to be able to get to a place where you're able to hold on to God when you're doubting the fact that God is holding on to you. And so here's what I want you to do as we leave, because I am so passionate, especially in this season, I think more than ever, of you not just sitting in a row. And some of you, so incredible for this series, it's gonna help so many. You decided you were gonna invite somebody to come sit with you, and already today, those have turned into incredible stories, so thank you for doing that. Others of you decided, I'm not gonna just, are we going? Yes, we're going, and you showed up today in order for God to work in your heart, but I want you to go beyond just sitting in a row. And so on your way home, maybe, for others of you who are in a group, add these to your group questions. Others of you who aren't in a group, I think it's a non-negotiable. Get your life as busy. You should unbusy it, and you should get into a group so you can begin to grow in your faith and you can get your kids in those environments. But here's the two questions I want you to ask this week. Have you ever had a second thought about the goodness of God because of pervasive pain and suffering in the world? I just want you to grapple with that. And second question, how has personal suffering impacted your confidence in the goodness of God? And I want to give two things for you, and for some of you, this is going to be relevant. On your message notes on the CenterPoint app, there's a book, and for some of you, you need something else. And the book is called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I Believe by Kate Ballard. It's right there. You can click on it, buy it on Amazon. We had a bunch of people do that in the first service, right on the message app. And then the second step for some of you is I want us, and we're doing this with every series, I want you to read with us throughout the series. There's a reading plan in the Bible called Hope in the Dark. It's short, so if you're just getting started, it's easily digestible. I want you to click on that reading plan, and I'd love for you at some point in this three-week series to track through that, so you're not just sitting in a row, you're not just hearing me, you're allowing God to begin to move and work in your heart and begin to anchor the reality that God has not abandoned you. And then I want to close with this. With this kind of series and kind of message, one of the things that the enemy wants to do more than anything else is he wants to isolate you in the midst of hurt and pain and get you to feel like you're the only one. And so as we close, I just want to pray together as a church family, as a church body. And if you're new, you can participate at whatever level that you want. And I want to do two things. For some of you, you need just a physical demonstration and reminder that even if people don't know the details, somebody's praying for me. And so in a second, I'm gonna ask you to stand up if that's you, and you just need somebody at a general level. They don't have to know the reason, circumstances, just to pray over you today. And then behind me are gonna appear some prayer requests. And maybe you don't know this, but every week when people fill out that prayer request card right in front of them, or they go to the app to fill them out, those are prayed for multiple times by a prayer team. And I just want you to know, I wanna end this by punctuating the fact that if you're walking through a season that seems too heavy and too hard, you're not alone. And I wanna pray together for those individuals at a general level on screen. So I'm gonna give us about 2 minutes to do that before CC Music leads out. But if you just need prayer in this moment, would you just stand up? And if there's nobody, that's fine. But if there's people again in the service, respond to go, this is a moment at a general level, I just need prayer. I need to know that somebody is praying for me. I need to know that somebody sees me. And I get that that can be a little bit awkward, but that's fine. And let me just, I just want us to pray together. I want you to pray over what's on the screen, and I'm gonna do it quietly. You can lead in however you want, but would we just pray together where you're at, online or in the house this morning?
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this message or have been impacted by CenterPoint Church in any way, would you consider helping us out in one of two ways? First, if you would just spread the word, share this message with your friends, family. Maybe you could go rate and review our podcast on your favorite podcast catcher, but this helps us so much more than you know. And secondly, this ministry is supported by people like you through their financial generosity. And so if you've been impacted by any of these messages, would you consider giving to support the mission and vision of Centerpoint to see people reach with the radical grace of Jesus? You can give today on our website at centerpointfl.org. And again, that's centerpointfl.org.